Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Emerging Enterprise Radio, featuring high growth companies and their trusted advisors.
Welcome to another episode of Emerging Enterprise. I'm your producer, Kevin Finn, and as usual, I have Van Baird in the studio with me.
What's up, my friend?
Nothing much. Just relaxing. It's Friday, man.
It's you and me hanging out. Sans Taylor.
Yep.
She's getting married. Did you hear?
I heard. Well, it's like 4 or 5 months from now.
Ish.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's crunch time.
Can you come on the show Friday? Nope. I'm getting married in September, so she couldn't be here.
It's crunch time.
Our co-host. But it's okay. We miss her. So, yeah, happy Friday to you.
Definitely. Yes.
Well, this is pretty exciting. We've the longest booked guest we've had, farthest out. We've had it booked for 6 weeks-ish. And so we're excited to introduce everybody. But I'm actually going to have a guest introduce a guest today. Haven't done that before. Ryan Pernice is here. And if you don't know Ryan, you probably know his restaurants at Table in Maine in Roswell. That's an historic street down there.
It sure is. It's right where the street gets very Civil War-y.
Yeah. Antebellum-ish?
It's totally antebellum.
Yeah, that's all that is. So restaurateur, best classification?
Yeah, that works just fine. Restaurateur.
Roswell kid done good.
That's right. That's right.
And at said Table in Maine, you hire amazing people to work there.
We try. That's the most important thing.
And there was one amazing employee in particular that we're going to talk about here. Behind her back, she's not even listening.
No, she's not even in the room.
No.
She's definitely not right across from me.
We wouldn't do that to her. But you had an employee that had a crazy idea that you totally embraced, and I'd love for you to tell us about her.
Well, yeah, absolutely. One of the fun things about restaurants is a lot of the people who work in them are involved in interesting side projects of their own. We're going to talk today about Sarah and her passion Kula project. And what was fun about that was I got to watch the evolution of this be her side project, where she was, you know, mostly involved in Table in Maine as a bartender, and then sort of had this moonlight job as her passion in Kula. And that evolved over time to the point where Table in Maine became her side project and Kula became her main focus. And it was really a special thing to watch. So Sarah Buchanan is our guest today on Business Radio X. And we're going to be talking about her wonderful philanthropy Kula project and how it came to be.
I think he's permanent now, Kevin. We're just going to have him permanently. That was
definitely
the best intro.
I'm not leaving.
Of a guest.
Never.
Ever. And not a bad radio
I'm
voice.
Let him do every show from now on. We'll sit back. He can be Van Baird. How about that? Or he
That's
can be
fine.
Kevin Finn.
That's fine. So we have Sarah Buchanan on the show. I was watching you as he was talking, and you've been like bigger than life the whole time we've been in here. And he starts talking, and you like just were beaming and just having to listen to this. You know, somebody saying sweet things about you. You're not comfortable with that.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
But welcome.
Thank you.
So we are super excited because we've had not even 6 degrees of separation. Mm-hmm. It's 1 degree of separation from Root Radius, especially that Mike guy at that Land of a Thousand Hills. He was on here. great guy. But welcome to the show, finally.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Another local girl done good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to spend some time talking about your passion, Kula Project. And obviously, our guests are able to articulate that better than anybody else. So for everybody listening, tell us about this passion that I'm sure Ryan was the, you know, the reason for.
Yeah.
No, just kidding.
he sometimes will take that credit.
Take the credit.
Yeah, so we started just over 2 years ago, May 14th of 2012, and we started with this idea of, hey, let's work with farmers. If you travel at all through a developing country, you'll see that every single person has a farm or a small garden.
Yeah, not farmers in Indiana.
Nope.
Farther away.
Smaller, I'd say smaller than a football field.
But you didn't stay local. This is
farmers in Rwanda. Yeah, we started in Swaziland with an organization called Heart for Africa, and then we moved up to Kenya, and then Rwanda. And then once we got to Rwanda, we were like, yeah, we're going to stay here for a while.
Who is we? Give us a little bit more background. What was going on? And
James and I. James is the co-founder.
Okay.
And we started this together after a series of interesting events, and we've molded a lot since then. Even our name. So okay. I don't like to tell this story, but I found that when I do tell it, it's pretty funny.
Okay.
So when we started, we were going to do hydroponics. We were like, you know, there are a lot of places that can't grow food. Hydroponics allows you to, you know, you don't need good soil. And then we kind of realized that, you know, East Africa has some of the most fertile soils in the world. Why would you take soil out of it?
Right.
But the funny thing about that was when we started because of hydroponics. And the Latin translation of hydroponics is the labor of water.
Right.
So I started this organization and I come in and to Ryan and I said, Ryan, go to waterlabor.org. And he looks at me and says, Sarah, I don't. He says, I do not have time to watch a lady have a baby in a bathtub. And I was like, oh my gosh, water birth. And so realized that, okay, we got to change the name.
We got to change the name.
And it worked out because we don't even do hydroponics anymore. So
gotcha.
Kula means to eat in Swahili,
right,
which is much more appropriate.
Very.
Yeah. And it makes a better URL.
Ish.
So, but now I have some friends that are having babies and a lot of them are choosing the water birth method. And I'm like, do you want t-shirts? No.
You made them? No.
Yeah, no.
You had them made up?
We were like full on.
She was like, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, we had t-shirt. Well,
I feel like
we had
an episode of some TV show.
Yeah, I know. Gosh, my whole life is like that. We had to sell t-shirts to be able to pay for our 501c3 filing fee.
Okay.
And so we made Water Labor t-shirts. And what's funny about that is that our logo, even at the time, we met with Root Radius and we're going over and it was this jerry can with water growing out of it. And Josh Webb of Root Radius looks at me and was like, you know, that's Charity Waters logo just made blue. And I was like, so you're telling me I have a water birthing company with a plagiarized logo? So we've come pretty far in 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, take us back to the trip, right? Because there was a specific trip you went on that gave you the heart for the people over there.
Yep. So I went in 2009 to Kenya with an organization out of Alpharetta called 410 Bridge. And I went with this amazing dentist and I literally held flashlights all day. And I didn't really know my purpose and I just was kind of there. And I met this little girl. She was so precious and she was wearing this blue sweater. Fast forward a year, I go back with the same group, same week of the year. And she was still there and she was still wearing this sweater. And I thought, as a 1.5-year-old, they grow quickly and she shouldn't fit in that sweater anymore. So I start talking to her mom as best as I could with the language barrier. And she explains that there was a really bad drought. They had no food. Their family couldn't grow any food. All of her kids were starving. And so her little girl was already showing the signs of stunting, which is irreversible. And I thought, I hate that, and I want to fix it. Mm. I had never grown anything in my life.
Right.
So farming wasn't exactly my first go-to, but I came home, I changed my major to international development and really started seeing the undeniable effects of agriculture on developing countries.
Okay, so you're what year in college when you did that?
Well, I was almost done.
Okay.
So I was pre-law. I was almost done.
Right.
I was going to be a lawyer and make a lot of money, and no, I'm not. But
okay, so you're 21, 22 at the time?
Yeah. Well, it took me a couple years to finish school. Okay.
I was trying to get
the 2008 age. Or 2009.
Okay.
And I'm
so 5 years ago.
Yeah, 5 years ago.
Okay.
So 23.
Okay.
And I was almost done, and then I changed my major and added a year and a half to my already extended college time. But you know, I knew if I went into pre-law, that wasn't gonna be where I ended up.
Okay.
So I wanted to have some footing as to how do I work in a developing country? What do they need? How do I go about that? How do I build programs? And
so at what point did you get to Table in Maine?
So I needed a job when I,
when
I was in, like to finish
Weird
school.
Weird how that works.
Yeah.
Right?
So I was working at another restaurant on the street and then somebody was like, there's a new restaurant opening. You should go try it. Cause I didn't like where I was. So I met with Ryan and there were like no walls in Table in Maine yet.
No,
think.
We didn't put those in until later.
Only the necessary
stuff.
Needed the grill first.
Yeah, that's all you need.
So I opened Table in Maine August 16th of 2012. 2011, right, because I started Kula in May of 2012.
Okay.
So when I got started, I told him, I was like, I'm not going to be here forever, just so you know.
Right.
And then...
She was right.
Yeah.
Soothsayer that she is. Okay, so you had that trip. You realize that farming is going to be the avenue in which you can make the difference. Mm-hmm. Take us from there. I mean, where does that idea go from water labor to Kula to... You know, how does James get involved? Bring us up to speed.
So James was in there from the beginning. I mean, he's the whole reason I even learned of hydroponics. I didn't even know about it. That's a really long story. Okay. But he bought it, and we just looked at it and said, hey, we can use this. And so we met with Heart for Africa, Janine Maxwell. And she was like, yeah, y'all come to Swaziland. That's where they work. And she's like, and we'll start this hydroponics project. And now looking back on it, I feel like she kind of knew that this wasn't going to work that well, but she knew that we had something and wanted to give us a chance. So we went, we were in Swaziland for a month in November of 2012. And from there, we came back and we were like, yeah, I don't know if we can teach people who have a third grade education that don't speak English how to do this thing that we just learned how to do, you know? So we... kind of restructure a little bit, and then we were in Jamaica and we kind of realized that we were trying to make people be farmers until we realized, you know, there are a billion small farmers in the world. Let's work with people who are already trying to do something. So we went to Kenya, worked with an amazing farmer named Phoebe, and that was when we were like, okay, we are for the farmer. This is our program. We're going to make these very personal investments in people and take them to where they need to go.
Right.
So
you're 23-ish at this point. I mean, what's you had a law degree in your future. So what was it that you said, this has got to be what I pursue?
Man, you know, the people of East Africa in particular, there isn't anything like it there. I get a lot of criticism for working there and for not working in the United States. Which is funny to me because working with a small farm in the United States isn't going to really get anybody anywhere.
Well, there's a dynamic there because that was actually one of the questions I had. Because people have a heart for different parts of the world, and the devil's advocate point is, well, wait a minute. America's got plenty of problems.
Right.
Right? But there is no government to fall back on where in Swaziland like there is here. And so the impact is not as great. Is that you're having with 20 families mm-hmm. over there, right?
Right. Okay. Well, and my thing is, and I've really tried to perfect that answer, and I just haven't.
Okay.
I haven't it's been okay. able to get one that makes people think okay. But when you look at these people and you have a friendship with them mm-hmm. and you exchange, like when you love them, there's no way I'm going to look at them and say, you know. Sorry, you're not an American. I can't help you.
No.
You know?
Right.
And for $3,000, we can help a family double their income for 30 years.
Yeah.
For $3,000, I can't fix a tractor.
Right.
You
right.
know?
Yeah.
And these people depend on their farm for everything. We grow a garden because it's cool to have your, or, you know.
Sure. In certain parts of the country.
In certain parts, yeah. And I mean, people who work with that here, it's amazing. And it's not like I'm against it. I love America, but.
So you've actually, people have like...
Oh, yeah. I mean, like 4 or 5 times a day.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. You know, the flip side then, because so many people have come in with an entrepreneurial heart, a social good heart, right? And even in the same vein, in the same type of an organization, there's so much collaboration mm-hmm. that goes on with people that have similar hearts or a desire. You don't have to be doing the exact same thing, but to learn... from other people. So people here that I know have invested in you that don't do what you do, plywood, mm-hmm. root radius, things like that. The collaboration piece, even though you're not here in America necessarily,
right.
there's still so much that we can learn. I mean, what are just some simple things that you guys are doing over there that people could institute over here?
Yeah. You know, we built some gardens like around town. We mm-hmm. worked at Gateway Center with Gateway Center, but we built a garden for their homeless culinary training program. We built a garden in the drainage ditch at Table in Maine.
In the drainage ditch.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
But I, yeah, Brian was like, we have this big piece of nothing. Let's make it a garden. We're like, okay. But we do work in the United States. We work with kids. Mm. So we teach kids about growing your food, knowing where your food comes from, the importance of knowing where your food comes from.
Right.
And we teach them about Africa and what we do over there. And
right.
I remember when I was in fifth, sixth, seventh grade, the thought of ever going there was just like a world away.
Yeah, literally.
You know, and it's not like one of the things. I just got back from Rwanda a couple days ago, and every time I'm there, it's so amazing how humans are so similar.
Right.
You know, I get up in the mornings and I watch kids walking to school. I mean, they walk to get water first, which is sure. a little different than us. But, you know, kids are the same everywhere, like playing and hitting each other and laughing.
Yeah.
And, you know, their toys are a little different. But,
yeah.
you know, even like the way parents interact with their kids. And it's, you know, we're all humans and it's sure. really interesting. And I think it's important for kids who might not have a chance to go or might not even realize it's an opportunity to know that there are people that are a lot like you, just,
yeah.
you know, a little different.
So talk about your connections there with those people that you have a heart for. Like, who touched you the deepest, the soonest? Was it the little girl in the sweater? And since then, you know, why do you keep going back? Who are the people?
This last trip was pretty game-changing for me. And I mean, this, I think it was my seventh or eighth time over there in the past 5 years, but mm-hmm. this one was different. I met a woman, or not met her. We work with a lady named Maria, and she, this year, actually, like right now, we're in the middle of the 20th anniversary of the genocide in Rwanda.
Right.
So I've never asked any of our farmers their genocide story, or, you know, that's just not something that's my place to ask.
Right.
But this time she wanted to share it. So we decided, okay, let's, you know, talk about forgiveness and how Rwanda has moved forward in mm-hmm. the past 20 years. And so I asked her, I just start with saying, you know, how old were you when the genocide started? And she says 13, and she says it in her language. So our translator says it. And then she just starts weeping and starts talking and doesn't stop for 15 minutes. Like never stops the translator to tell us what she said. And I look over and the translator has turned his head and he's crying and she's crying. Oh, wow. So then we all start crying and I don't even, I just still don't know what she said. I know the overview of it, but sure. the translator, we sent it off to a production company to get translated word for word because our translator couldn't even keep up. But the gist of it is,
you got that on video?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we're still struggling on if we want to. I think yeah. we'll just put out parts of it.
Okay.
Some of it, I felt like she shared it knowing our intentions to use it to okay. publish it, but.
But that's their story over there. I mean, there's nobody yeah. that's there that's still alive that's older than 20 years that hasn't
that
had that
doesn't
story.
Have that, right.
So that's it's all but defining them, and it shouldn't.
Right. Right.
So they're relearning how to live.
Right. So.
Powerful.
Her six of her brothers and sisters were slashed. So the genocide was really barbaric and they didn't have any weapons like that we think of weapons. They had machetes. So six of her brothers and sisters were slashed and her father was. And then her mom was able to bribe the men not to kill Maria, her only remaining child.
Oh my gosh.
And it worked. But so in exchange for that, her mom was repeatedly raped and contracted AIDS and died a few years later. And Maria was 13 and too traumatized to go back to school. So she has the education of a 13-year-old.
Right.
And she is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, I felt almost weird that I kept telling her how beautiful she was. I was like, you're so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if you know much about the genocide, but it was 100 days, a million largely Hutu or Tutsis were killed by the Hutu population.
Right.
And what's amazing is that Maria is now married to a Hutu.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And her little boy's name is Umuheza, which means the link. And she says that's the link of Hutus and Tutsis now, like living in love together.
Holy cow.
And so I asked, so our program will double her income.
Right.
And by her work.
Yeah.
And I asked her what she'll do with the income. And she said the first thing is she'll send her two little boys, Umuheza, Samuel, and then Emmanuel to school, secondary mm-hmm. school, mm-hmm. something that she never got to do. And then she said if she has any left over, she wants to hire farm hands so she can get a tutor to get her high school diploma.
Okay.
And I'm just like, oh, yeah. Like, okay. This is why I work here. This yeah. is why I come back. This yeah. is why I do what we do.
Wow. Well, it's so funny because here at Business Radio X, the mantra is business is good.
Yeah.
And you guys have had a lot of microfinancing companies on.
Yeah, definitely.
On other shows, not just ours. And so there's story after story of being able to do so much and go farther, faster.
Mm-hmm. And no one else talks about it. It's amazing.
No. No, and so glad you're here today, because as much as there are, you know, things we can do in America, there are entrepreneurs out there and making money, and but we can send people, we can make a difference in business, you know, depending on where their heart is. So when y'all opened Table in Maine, how hard was it to keep her focused and keep her there? Because it's one of the best, listen, no hyperbole, it's one of the best restaurants in Atlanta. And so you want people that are working for you, but tell us more about her heart and how you wanted to help this project get off the ground.
Well, I think one important thing when you're running restaurants is it's really true. I can sit in my sort of academic ivory tower and talk about how important service is. But in our business, if you put people out on the front lines who don't live that, then it doesn't really matter. So part of why it's important to keep your team engaged is recognizing, look, you know, Table in Maine is absolutely my life, but it might not be yours. And if you're doing something, let's say on the side, and I don't mean that in a pejorative sense, but you've got some other sort of project you're working on, mm-hmm. that's great, and we want to help that, and we want to foster that and do what we can to help you sort of embrace that so that Table in Maine stays a good thing in your life and not, oh gosh, I got to go to work again, I hate being there because I'd rather be working on Kula, whatever it is. So really, you know, we try and make allowances for that sort of thing because I think it keeps your employees more engaged when you help support those other parts of their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, if you just show up and you're a number and I yell at you for being 2 minutes late and I'm just a jerk, nobody wins there.
No.
So it became pretty apparent that Kula, or water labor in the very beginning, was more than sort of a passing interest with Sarah. And so then it became a point of, all right, we've got this really great engaged employee who people really like and she's doing a great job and the guests love her. You know, it would have been bad for us to say, well, you can't do this other thing. You work here. Right. Not only would that have not yielded very great results, Sarah would have quit.
Yeah.
So, right. Yeah. So again, I'm all about, well, what's the win-win here? So if we can embrace this thing and make it a part of Sarah's life and make Table in Maine a part of its life, well, now we're even more connected. Right. So, you know, I got business benefits from that. Like, right. People like the story Sarah would tell at the bar of her going to Africa. Sarah gave me a 2-month notice that she was leaving. And when I needed more, she gave me more.
Okay.
So if I had sort of tried to stifle this other thing, I wouldn't have gotten any of that benefit.
Yeah.
So for me, it's often about, okay, well, I need to make Table in Maine a success and I will do anything I need to do to get there. But oftentimes the best way to get there is, well, what's the win-win here?
Right.
How can we forge a path wherein everybody succeeds and has positive effects?
Yeah. And that's so true for any business leader, starting a business. You know, when you're going to hire people, it's nice to make sure everybody's happy, right? You don't want to come to work every day in a place you don't like.
Yeah, it's essential. And if you're running, you know, I don't want to single out any business, but if you're running a business where your employees aren't directly in contact with your guests, it's even more important in our business that your employees, at the end of the day, be happy. And I think a lot of times you don't need to care as much about that as you need to in service industry.
No, for sure.
We've all been waited on by people. You can tell they just do not want to be there.
No.
And that's a bad thing, and it definitely kills the meal.
So where did you get that kind of training to know and have the wherewithal to, is it just treat people the way you want to be treated? Because business, there's all these unwritten rules, right? You're your own boss. You can treat people the way. So where did your training come from to... Because you don't have just one restaurant.
No. We've got two restaurants. I think I was indoctrinated in the Danny Meyer method of hospitality, and he owns a restaurant group called Union Square Hospitality in New York that does Maialino, Gramercy Tavern, Union Square Cafe, and he is a very celebrated restaurateur in the country. So sort of learning from his group, and I had some great mentors and bosses up there, was fantastic. But, you know, at the end of the day, I am selfish. I am a business owner. I want maximum gain from my business.
Right.
And I believe the way to do that is to seek out those win-wins instead of trying to keep all the sort of pieces to yourself.
Right. Well, you bought in on a couple of different levels with Kula. I mean, obviously allowing Sarah the chance to go and do, but you're also on the board.
Yeah. No, that was definitely a quid pro quo. To get that extra time for her to stay and work, I had to be on the board. So, yeah.
So what are you the most excited about when you hear what's going on with the project?
I think the greatest thing about Sarah and James in this organization is the unbridled passion and enthusiasm mm-hmm. they bring to the table. And that's essential and is important because only they can provide that. You know, 20 years from now, when Kula has a million employees the world over, only the founders can bring that sort of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
But I think at a certain point, sometimes you have to call a timeout and go, yeah, all this stuff is super exciting. How does it benefit the organization? And of these 13 different options we're considering that we're excited about, all of them, only two or three are really going to yield what we need it to yield, right. Whether that's money in my business or, you know, whatever metric you're looking at, repeat guests, donations, whatever. So I think at a certain point, it's of value to have someone that goes, all right, yeah, we're all excited about this. That's awesome. Which of these things best serves the organization?
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think that I don't know if it's level-headedness or business mindset and reliance on data and metrics for what is going to get us what we want here.
All right. Talk a little bit about the organization. How are y'all set up? Who does what? And what's your biggest challenge right now?
You know, our biggest challenge is we had a hard time getting people to care about farmers. You know, it's not like the easiest thing to get excited about.
Okay.
And we get that. And so now we're at this point of how do we tell these amazing people's stories and how do we accurately explain everything that can happen? Mm-hmm. Like if you care about education, instead of sponsoring a child and, you know, sending money to, we don't even know where it's going, mm-hmm. help their parents send them to
right.
school.
Right.
You know, if you care about hunger, help their parents feed them. If you care about medical care, help their parents have the money to afford a medical insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, all those, like $6 a year for medical insurance in Rwanda.
Wow.
Six.
That's healthcare reform.
Yeah.
That's the kind of healthcare reform this guy's looking for.
So now we're at the point, and that's what, you know, Ryan was saying, is that we had all these ideas, and at the end of the day, we had to take off, you know, 80% of them to do these 20% really, really,
really well. Yeah.
And now we're at that point. It's like we have the program set up. We're ready to go. Now we got to raise funds.
Yeah.
I'd say one of our biggest challenges, we don't like being dependent on donations.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, 70% of our budget is donations, and
right.
we'd like to get that to like 10.
So where's the other 30?
So now events and that kind of stuff. Merchandise.
Gotcha.
We sell a lot of like t-shirts and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So now we're trying to figure out, okay, how do we create some revenue streams? How can we, you know, get money besides asking for it?
Right.
Or depending on somebody to give it.
Okay. So where do you go with that? I mean,
that's a great question.
Don't you depend on your board for those kind of things?
Yeah, we have a board meeting on Monday.
Okay.
We're going to answer all of those questions on Monday.
Well, here's some similarities in just about anybody we have on that started a project, a company, a business, in that you've got your wins, you've got your naysayers,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, even, you know, how old were you when you started your first restaurant?
I opened Table in Maine when I was 25.
Like, what are you, crazy? Like, nobody does that when they're 25. You of course, got that kind of feedback, right?
Yes.
So, you know, it's just to encourage you from a commonality in that, you know, your heart's evident. Like, just to watch your face when he's talking about, mm-hmm. you know, what you're doing is just to keep going, right? Because we've all been there and have people that want to just not understand, or they just don't get it, or they're just mean people in general. But the good that you're doing over there, how do people get involved? Because there's so many of us, we say on the show all the time, Atlanta is an incubator for these kind of causes
mm-hmm.
and people that have a heart like that. And we don't talk down to millennials, right? They might be a category of a demographic, but it's not a label. But how do people get involved at a level that you feel like can really make a difference other than just giving money?
Yep. Honestly, it's helping us share our story. We're trying to work through, what does it look like to take people with us? You know, that's a lot of money for people to go, and all of the labor is done by our farmers. So when you get there, you know, there isn't a ton for a bunch of volunteers to do unless you have an expertise that can be taught or used. So we're really working on helping people just share what we're doing in a way that helps people connect to our farmers. It, you know, all of our farmer investments are really personal. You know, mm-hmm. I know all their names. I know their kids' names. I can walk to their house. You know, I know where they are. So it's really fun to be able to, you know, hey, you gave us $50 last week, and this is going to go to Gertrude's farm, Gertrude and Ellie, and then they have four little girls, and this is where they're on a GPS, you know, this is where they live.
Right.
And then now it's like, hey, remember 3 years ago when you gave us $50? That funded, you know, seven coffee trees, and now that is giving us income, and now Angel can go to school, you know.
Well, and that philosophy has been around forever with, like, Compassion International and things like that, where you can, for certain pennies a day, but that you guys give the ability to connect, whether it's through digital or whether through an actual trip, because one of the most endearing stories is a really good friend of mine had a compassion child that him and his newlywed wife sponsored for 3 or 4 years, happened to go to that country on a missions trip. No communication, no nothing. The bus pulls up into the town that the girl, you know, they know lives, and it's like he sees her, right, on the bus, and like knocks people out of the way getting off the bus to go and meet this child that he's been. So there's opportunities there to actually see where your money's going. Mm-hmm. And a lot of companies can say that.
Yeah. And not only that, so we partner with Land of a Thousand Hills Coffee. So all of our farmers have a guaranteed fair trade buyer for their coffee. And so maybe if you can't meet them, you can buy the coffee that they grew.
And that's through Land of a Thousand Hills. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
yeah.
So we have, we've co-branded bags. So we have Kula Coffee.
Yep.
And so that's, I mean, you invest in a farmer and then every morning you can think of them when you're drinking
their coffee.
Their coffee. Yeah.
So cool.
That is so cool. We could teach them to make beer too. Between coffee and beer, we could pretty much.
Well, they make banana beer.
Stop. Ooh.
Yeah. It's like 25% or something. I told one of the guys on the team, I was like, I want to taste this banana beer, you know, and he was like, no, you don't. And I don't know how it's made, but he's like, besides the fact that it tastes terrible,
it does taste
sanitary.
Okay.
Like, where it comes from.
You don't want to know.
It's a little questionable.
Okay.
I still want to taste. It's like, if I'm going to be in Rwanda for this long, I have to taste banana beer.
Try it once.
Yeah, that's what he said. He said, you only try it once.
Did you?
No, I couldn't find anybody to let me. Even, and it's so Manu.
They like her too much to give it to her.
They do. So Manu, he is the guy that helped us on the ground in Rwanda. And he's Land of a Thousand Hills head agronomist. And they've allowed us to hire him to help with our stuff. And he's so protective of me. And it's really, it's
adorable.
So sweet. It's so sweet. And he's like, say it out. That's how he says my name. Say it out. Oh, you should not drink that.
He hasn't seen Seda over here in America, right?
she was a bartender. It's research, I think.
We should have a banana beer cocktail at Table of Maine that supports Kula.
Definitely if it's 25%.
Yes.
That thing will sell right there.
Oh, yeah. Is it legal here?
I have no idea. It's like one of those things, like, if you can finish this huge drink, we're going to put your picture on the wall, and it's free. Yeah.
Well, there is, I mean, you know, from a collaboration standpoint, there are companies out there that have a heart of saying, hey, we'll give a percentage of sales, you know, to a project for a certain period of time. You know, we've heard of companies like Hope International and things like that that come in and just talk about how to fund microfinancing in other countries. But so you knew we were going to have you intro her, but I haven't set y'all up for this. So talk a little bit about what Table in Maine and business owners in general, how they've helped you and Kula, because I don't think you'd be doing what you do without Table in Maine.
Yeah, so I'd say 98% of the key people that have helped Kula get where it is, I met through Table in Maine.
Wow.
I mean, that high of a number, like, I'm willing to go there. Like, it's been
Can't be taken back now.
Yeah.
So. We've got it's recorded. It's recorded.
The people that have embraced us from the very beginning, even when they knew my idea was, you know, when it was
water labor
and a completely unsustainable method of farming in developing countries, they knew that I was gonna figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, and they have, I mean, from, you know, large checks to advocacy to helping me meet somebody else that can help us, and, you know, we look down, like, at our board. Every single person on our board I met because of Table in Maine.
Okay.
And Ryan didn't even know him. It was just from people I met, people introducing to people. The reason I met Land of a Thousand Hills was because of somebody I met at Table in Maine.
Wow.
You know? So it's just this big circle, and Table in Maine's right in the middle.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I went through so many days, I was like, I hate bartending. You know? But then at the end of the day, I go, and there are all these people there who truly care about what we're doing and care about us as, you know, individuals.
Well, I'm pulling up drinkcoffeedogood.com because I do want to put the link directly to the Kula coffee. Mm-hmm. Because just as we were sitting here, I was like, well, that's then the most enjoyable way I could help fund it, because unless I'm missing something, like, so every bag that's sold.
So, yeah, so I don't know if you can get Kula coffee on Land of Thousand Hills, but you can get it on ours.
Okay, we'll go there.
Kulaproject.org/market. So for every coffee bag that people buy here, we're able to provide one coffee tree that to a farmer.
Okay.
Wow.
Whoa, sweat.
Yeah. So one bag, you buy a coffee bag, we're able to buy a coffee tree.
For $15,
mm-hmm.
he gets a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And how much space do they have? How many trees can they possibly farm? This is depending on how much land they own?
500 or less, yeah. Because they're all small-scale farmers.
Sure.
I started saying small farmers, and people were like, are they like...
No, the land like
small,
size.
Yeah, small-scale farmers. So we have some that are going to be planting 500 in October, some that will be planting 200, 250.
Okay. And that's manageable for just them and their family.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Like, coffee's hard.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons we're starting with 20 farmers is... You know, it takes 3 years for a coffee tree to produce.
Okay.
And that's what's kind of hard about what we do. It's like there is no instant gratification. I can't send you this amazing photo of like children dancing in water.
But think like 3 years from now. I mean, it'll be constantly constant production.
After the 3 years, it'll produce from on average 30. You know, so it's like you wait these 3 years and you care for it and you love it and you cultivate
it. And you get 30 years of production out of one tree.
30 years production of one tree.
That's a great ROI right there.
God.
Yeah.
Okay. So we just put this on a continual order, and that's one way
mm-hmm.
you guys are going to, the farmers are directly going to benefit.
Directly benefit from that, yeah.
Was that your idea?
No, that was not my idea. But while I've got the mic here, I do want to mention, as a board member, I feel compelled to mention, you can write a check. You can do that too.
You just give money.
You'll let us?
That's fine.
You will let us do that.
On the website as well.
They make it easy.
We try.
That's why he's on the board.
As possible, yeah.
Yeah, he's much better at that than I am. I'm like,
Well, you know, Father's Day's coming up, and we saw the bow ties for the first time. I'm like, well, there you go. How easy is that? Now, I obviously would rather tie my own tie, but it's okay. It's
obviously.
Just a time saver. It's a time saver. Have you seen these?
I haven't seen those. What is it?
It's a Kula coffee bag bow tie.
Yeah, so those are made by some women that are actually in a different community in Rwanda.
Ooh.
And when we asked, when I told them that the sale of what they were making, which they thought was hilarious, by the way, they thought the bow tie was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. Manu actually said, you know, he asked if he could have one. I was like, of course you can. And he said, I think if anybody's ever sad, then I'll put this bow tie on and for sure they'll start laughing. Okay. That's not really the goal, but that's okay.
I love it.
Bow ties are cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are. And that's a cool way of. So, any other way we're not talking about for people to get involved here other than eating at table in Maine?
And yeah, so...
on that
there's
note...
There's a direct correlation.
Yeah.
He's a board member. Board members have certain responsibilities. The more you eat at table in Maine...
Right.
The more he's able to fulfill his responsibilities.
The
totally.
Bigger checks Ryan can write.
Exactly.
We so last year we had our first For the Farmer campaign. And we had 11 restaurants donate 20% of sales, and we raised over $17,000 in one day with almost no overhead. So this year, our goal is to get 20 restaurants and raise $30,000.
And when's that going to be?
August 14th.
It's coming up.
Yeah.
Soon.
So right now we have Table in Maine, Osri Matone on board. We have The Optimist on board, Salt Factory. So we have some good ones. So know any restaurant owners that would want to talk to us?
Okay.
Give me a call.
Well, there are. I mean, like, I do think if we buy a bag of coffee,
mm-hmm.
are there, maybe we can talk more about this off air if we need to, but are there restaurants that could just serve Kula coffee?
Yeah.
And just buy that, and there would be a direct benefit, obviously, mm-hmm. there as well, right? Because the stuff they're going to have to serve coffee anyway.
Right.
But I'd rather have them serve coffee that's going to make a difference than just whatever you can get from IFH or something.
Right.
Yeah. I just little lingo for the food industry in there.
Yeah, what was IFH?
International Food House, right?
Oh.
It's a distributor of food, but we digress. So, so August
14th. Yep.
So one day, one night.
One day. We have a couple that are open for lunch. We okay. We have 6 restaurants now, so we got to get 14 more.
Oh.
On board.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got 2.
Okay. All right. We've been talking about Table and Main the whole time. Now you've got a little bit more of an uppity place.
I do. Yeah, we opened an Italian restaurant about 7 months ago now called Osteria Mattone.
And it's say that one more time.
Osteria Mattone.
Yeah, I butchered it.
I'm glad you said it.
Osteria Mattone. Hey, you can call it whatever you want.
The OM.
Just come on down.
Still in Roswell.
It is right up the street in Roswell, right on Canton Street. And it's about 5 doors north of where Table and Main is. So we've got Table and Main, which does bourbon and fried chicken. And it's the older sibling of Osteria Mattone, which now does fresh pasta and wine, all sorts of good stuff.
Ooh, yum.
And World Cup.
And the World Cup. Yeah, coming up starting next Thursday, we're going to be broadcasting a lot of the World Cup games in our bar dining room.
Woot woot.
I'm very excited.
Special menu.
I'm so excited.
Right?
There's a special menu. There's a pizza and beer deal, because honestly, when you watch... Football.
Right.
As I'm told it's called. You want pizza and beer.
I'm so thrilled that the World Cup does what it does for soccer in America. Because not even like casual fans will not need much of a reason to go drink somewhere.
Yeah.
So that's really what it's turned into is another reason to go grab a beer somewhere.
Isn't there some statistic somewhere, since this is a business radio show, about how much money is lost by March Madness? Because people will make meetings and it's like, I got a meeting downtown. I got to go have a meeting.
March Madness in the day after the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I got to believe the World Cup's the same thing, because Americans don't need an excuse to go drink somewhere.
None.
During work.
None. That's exactly what I'll do that day.
Yeah.
And so we got reasons to drink World Cup. And we've got reasons to buy food in August. Mm-hmm. So we'll definitely stay in touch. And I want to be able to make sure our listeners and our followers on Relational EQ can track with that. Kula Project on Twitter. Really, really easy. We'll put all this up later on the site. Table and Main, the word and is in there spelled out, not the little squiggly line. And that gets you just about everywhere for you guys on Twitter, Facebook, and on the web.
That's right.
And kulaproject.org.
Yes.
Not .com. And you can do, what was it, water?
Yeah, you know, actually...
Don't go there.
We still have the domain. I was like, I bet I can make some money off this, because...
Somebody wants
water births are way on the
rise.
Somebody
wants that.
Yeah, somebody somewhere.
That's terrifying. I definitely want a t-shirt, though. I absolutely want a t-shirt.
I do, too.
You have a t-shirt. I gave you one.
Dope.
2 years ago.
I want another one.
It should at least be a redirect to Kula.
No, I don't want any association with that name. But you know, when we started, we had like 70 likes on Facebook by the time we changed our name, and we made a big joke about it. It was like, okay, that was dumb.
Right.
We've adjusted.
Well, in closing, if for no other reason, just so I can give Philly fans some grief, before I let you go, your whole family is willing to go into third world countries. You went to Rwanda, your brother went to Philly.
Yeah.
And
burn.
Hey.
That was well put.
It's an Atlanta thing.
I've been thinking about that for a while.
It's actually in my draft folder in my Twitter account. I just didn't know Sarah well enough to know whether or not I could put it out there. But talk about, you said we could talk the whole hour about your brother, but tell everybody about another good boy, good local boy done good.
Yep. So David actually worked at Table in Maine too.
That's right.
You are the link.
Your name needs to be very protective of his hand.
Umeheza. Yeah.
We would not let him carry plates with his right hand.
It's funny. I mean, 2 years ago, David was bussing tables
at
Table in Maine. And because in the offseason, I mean, minor league baseball players get paid nothing.
Right.
And so in the offseason, he needed a job. So Ryan let him come work at Table in Maine. And now, you know.
Just never asked him to throw you a tomato or anything.
No.
No.
Everybody's so protective of David. But he, I was in Rwanda when it happened, but he got his big league call up.
Yep.
And so he's had 3 games in the majors. The last one wasn't great, but he handled it. He handled it with big league class. And
he struck out half of the Nationals.
He did.
Let's be honest.
More than half.
Yeah, it was by
6.
Yeah.
There are 9. So, yeah. God, I know. I hate the Nationals. It's funny. I used to hate the Phillies.
Yeah, you can't.
But now I can't. And I thought, you know, I
the actually, rest of us can. It's
yeah.
Okay.
I thought the transition would be a lot harder than it has been.
That's your brother.
But, you know, and the Phillies have been great to David. He's learned so much. It's such a veteran pitching staff that he's been able to learn a lot. Every single one of them have purchased For the Farmer shirts. So it's fun. David said that they were in the locker room or the clubhouse. And we have really soft t-shirts, and they're all wearing these shirts. And the reporter's in the middle of an interview, and finally looks around, and it's like, okay, what's the farmer thing?
Who is
this farmer? Because everybody has on a For the Farmer shirt. Yes, David travels with us in the off-season, and his like when he got the call, the first thing he was like, and I'll tell everybody about Kula, and all my interviews, I'll tell them that my first call was to you, and you were in Rwanda for Kula. And
nice.
His whole goal is like to help us, and obviously, I mean.
Yeah.
To be a Major League Baseball player, but
secondly ish.
Yeah, I guess. He's the best, and he has worked so hard, and millions of little boys say that they're going to be a Major League athlete, and you know, 2 weeks ago David became one. So
cool.
Awesome.
It's weird. Like, I see all these videos of my parents, and you know, I miss it. I wasn't at the debut, but I wouldn't have traded where I was. But
so you missed the debut, and he won.
Yeah, you know,
you went to a game. So you're trying to blame this on the girlfriend.
No, don't say that.
We'll edit that part out.
He has a new girlfriend. She's great. She's Italian.
You're in so much trouble.
She's Italian. Man.
This is going to end poorly.
She's great, and she's beautiful. She's beautiful, and she's nice.
You are so red right now.
I think you missed a sign to.
I need to stop.
Here's for our recruiting at Table Maine. Here's what happens: you work at Table Maine, you go on to found an international awesome philanthropy, or go to the major leagues.
Yep. Yeah.
Clearly, that's my conclusion.
That was a good cleanup right there.
That was a great cleanup. Hey, on behalf of Business Radio X and Relational Equity to you both, thank you for coming on. We can't wait to be super fans online for you guys and come back anytime.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right, you're welcome. You going to take us out?
All right, well, this is Kevin Finn for Van Baird, our guest today, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Emerging Enterprise.